Well, hey, welcome to the Church Digital Podcast. This is episode 52 for those of you that are keeping track at home, and we're doing a special edition here for the episode. Normally, we were supposed to have this awesome conversation about the biblical functions of a digital church. We're just not going to go there because I really felt like we needed to head in a different direction as we're looking more and more at coronavirus and what's happening with that. And this is not meant to be an alarmist episode. I probably actually do lean a little bit more to the alarmist side. But honestly, the conversation of how church online how can reinforce and help the church and maybe helping churches develop a strategy for how to handle situations when catastrophes are happening or when they're about to happen or after they happen, it's kind of important. I myself, the church that I was at, First Baptist Church of Perrine, 1992, got hit by Hurricane Andrew. The roof fell within the church. I myself, in the house where I was at, I spent the majority of that hurricane, that Sunday night to Monday morning, huddled in the minivan in my garage as the rest of the house around me was exploding, and literally exploding because the pressure was more inside than out, and then it just kind of exploded. But what the fun part of it was, my entire family, my dog, and my 87-year-old great aunt were all huddled in this van because that was the safest place. And then it took us 18 months to get our lives back together. It took the church probably 16 months to reopen. And we know that tragedies like this happen. So whether Corona happens or if you're in, you know, the East Coast, Southeast, like I am, hurricanes, or if you're in the Midwest dealing with tornadoes, i.e. Nashville even this week, or if you're on the West Coast dealing with the earthquakes and everything that's there, I do think it's important for churches to have a strategy up front to try to figure out how to respond in those situations. Oftentimes when you do it after the fact, especially when you're talking technology, you don't have that infrastructure in place, but even a couple conversations up front can help you go a long way in the midst of the quote-unquote storms of life. So I wanted to bring together a panel of some guys and really just wanted to talk through some options about this. So I've got four people jumping on here. No, Andrew Statsny from Andrew, man, why don't you just take a minute and introduce yourself?
Yeah. I work with CDF Capital. I do a lot of online consulting work with churches. Worked at Life Church for 9 years and have a small tech startup as well. So
Andrew's a great guy working in the church online circles, and I've loved rubbing shoulders with him and some of these conversations. As well, I'm bringing in Kevin Lee from Saddleback. Kevin's no stranger to the podcast. Kevin was on probably episode 8 or 9, it's been a while, talking about a lot of the perceived issues that people have with church online. But Kevin, why don't you just a little bit what you specifically do over there at Saddleback?
Yeah, Jeff, good to be back. Thanks for having me. And I'm the small groups pastor for the online campus at Saddleback. I've been doing that for 2 years. And I just want to thank you for having me, because this episode was born out of my Facebook post kind of crying out for help. So thanks for doing that, Jeff.
Awesome. Yeah. Kevin posted on, well, we're going to get into that here in a little bit. Let's introduce the rest, but I do want to spend time on that post. We've got Jason Day from Outreach Magazine, probably my newest friend. I met Jason over at Exponential Conference, and I've loved spending some time with him. So Jason, man, just tell us a little bit about what you do for Outreach.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much, Jeff. Excited to be on here with you guys. I'm the Vice President of Mobilization and Outreach. So I oversee our major ministry initiatives. I also host the Church Leaders Podcast. I serve as Executive Director of National Back to Church Sunday. And so do a lot of speaking and training and kind of strategizing with denominations and ministry organizations, church planting networks, local churches on how to be more effective in sharing the gospel.
And of course, to wrap up the panel, Ray DeArmas, digital pastor from Christ Fellowship Miami, is in the midst of travel, so he's phoning in. Ray, you want to say hey?
Hey, everyone. It's great to be here with you, and I'm glad to be joined by these great guys from all over the place, man. Pleasure to have you all on.
Yeah, the awesome thing is, like, we've got, like, Ray and I are here down in Miami, and Kevin and Andrew are in California. So we got the hurricanes and we've got the earthquakes covered. Jason's in Colorado, and I'm not actually sure what the natural disaster there is except for glorious snow and skiing. But I'm sure there's some bad that, you know, does it get so bad in Colorado that you can't actually go to church? You get snowed in, right? That's a thing.
Yeah. Snowed in would be snow and ice might be the big thing that would keep people home. So
Kevin, you reached out, you wrote a post, maybe Sunday, or I think it was Monday by the time that it had really hit me, because you were talking about, well, Kevin, why don't you describe it?
Yeah. So, just to share a little bit of background, I was born and raised in Korea and came to the States when I was 11. So, you know, Korea is dear and near to my heart, and I have a close connections, and all my extended family are in Korea. And when this outbreak of coronavirus happened, started in China, but very quickly, some people in Korea had been infected, and it just, because of the nature of the virus being epidemic, it kind of shook the country as a whole. So, and I've started to see a lot of posts on my Facebook feed who are pastors in Korea saying, hey, we are going to now turn to online service for their gatherings. And I saw that. I've seen a couple of online church services that they were doing. And Korea is very much of a conservative like culture. And that is reflected on Christian or any religion. So not a lot of churches have online ministries and figured out. So I've seen a lot of churches, even the big churches, kind of struggling to do online ministry. And I just wanted to, even though I'm at Saddleback and we've been doing online ministry for a while and I'm learning a lot of things, I just wanted to get more resources and information about how other churches do online services in small group ministry and giving. So those things, I just gather my thoughts and post it. And then this group of people came together. So I'm here to learn from a lot of people here.
That's awesome. Well, let me ask this, like, you know, here in America, I'm speculating, but the number of churches versus the number of churches that are probably doing something online, and I don't know, one of you may have better stats, but it feels like it's 1-2% of churches that are broadcasting something. You know, I'm looking at 350,000 evangelical churches. Maybe there's 25,000 at this point that I think are that are on church online platforms. So, I mean, even if it's 3%, it's a very small percentage. Mm-hmm. I think we can safely say that. What is that are already doing church line? Is it like that in Korea? Is there more? Is there less? What does it look like? Do you know?
You know, I don't know the exact stat, but I know there aren't that many. It's probably less than 1%. Yeah, oh. What I can see is I've seen over the last year, over the last 6 months, some bigger churches, and there are a lot of big churches in Korea, bigger churches turned to YouTube Live to do online services, but it was very limited. There was no chatting, no really ministry involved other than live streaming. Because all before that, even before live streaming, it was all just recorded and putting out on their website. And that was the extent of online ministry. So this is all new. A lot of churches are, and this is very like an emergency for a lot of churches. Sure. In Korea. Yeah.
And I really don't want to be alarmist or anything. Mm-hmm. Like that, but like what's the state of Korea in this? Like quarantine's inability to gather together in groups, like as you know, people who are over there, friends and family, like, yeah. What are they reporting out to you?
Yeah. So all the, not all, but majority of churches, and I say this in a church perspective, a majority of the churches are turning to online and not meeting physically. And that's also some other, you know, political campaigns, other social kind of gatherings are all being canceled, and churches are probably the the biggest because they meet regularly.
So then, you know, as we look and learn some lessons from the Korea aspect where they're having to go to church online, mm-hmm. how long have they been enabled to meet in groups? And is there any like future, what are they expecting? Like what's the government saying over there?
You know, actually it's been about two Sundays. I think it's two Sundays that churches have kind of replaced their physical gatherings with online church. And it was just announced that they were just going to do it for 2 weeks and then they'll probably meet again. But all the churches that kind of embraced online ministry are extending that indefinitely until it gets better, which people are speculating it could be two more weeks, but it could be another 2 months. And what's really hurting the church over there is because online ministry and online church is so so new, online giving wasn't an option before. So you would imagine a lot of churches that are on loan and that have borrowed money have no really way to do giving. So I've heard that a lot of churches are, if this continues to 2 months and 3 months, and a lot of churches could close down, and that's a sad news for Korea and for the body of Christ.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, you know, something every operationally the city is fine. Like it was funny. Even my wife and I, we were dialoguing through, like our house, like what do we need to go buy, mm-hmm. and I immediately went to like, okay, buy meat for the grill because I can cook with propane when the power's out. And she's like, but the power will be fine. Like, we'll be able to watch Netflix all day long if we were, you know, had to be, you know, locked in for some reason or something. So it's a completely different paradigm than even what I'm used to in context of this. And so one of the things that I'd love to do just with the guys that are on here is just to start to dialogue through. You know, there are some things that I think, and Kevin brought up the thing about giving, and honestly, my knee-jerk reaction was, man, I really feel like a lot of churches here in America, like, understand the online giving component piece, but I also deal with churches that are primarily already doing church online and are probably more that tip of the spear when it comes to technological, so I don't really want to assume, like, adoption rates or some of that. So wanted to just maybe talk through, what are some options? What are some easy ways for giving, for broadcasting, for even trying to figure out how to help ramp in the groups and things like this? Because possibly speaking, the American church could be dealing with something like this. Secondarily, not that it's in any order, but Korean church could probably use some resources and directions for how to do this, especially if they're trying to figure out how to do this for, you know, a couple more months. And then thirdly, we're all going to need some guidance at some level, because if it's not Corona, it'll be another disease, or it'll be in another, you know, earthquake or tornado or hurricane, or the zombie apocalypse could one day in fact come that, you know, everybody watching Sci-Fi Network is fearing. I'm kidding. Although a friend of mine actually is preparing, but that's for another podcast. So, but let's dive into this. Like, yeah, let's talk about giving. It's the thing that he said up front. So, like, in this, once again, stats, ideas, even theories. I'm not looking for hard facts here as much as gut. Like, is there a large adoption rate here in America when it comes towards online giving? Have we already solved this problem? And for the Korean people, like, what would be, are there solutions at this point to help them onboard? What's involved?
Well, Jeff, I feel like online giving has become a thing in the United States for quite a bit. And I think some of the other folks that are on this pod would agree. And for churches, I mean, for churches that would be in a rush now to adopt online giving, I think they'd find themselves stretched at this point, because obviously the big thing is helping walk your people through the process of actually logging on to the website, you know, tying your bank account to it, etc. So it's not that it's too late for some folks, but it's that it increases the difficulty of onboarding people if you've not already gone through some of that process. The tools are there, it's already laid out, and there's a lot of competitors in that space. It's just the onboarding of people and the education of helping others along in terms of getting them on online giving that I think is going to be tough if you're just starting out.
Yeah, I would agree with Ray on that. Jeff, because, and one of the things that, that we're really encouraging churches to think through is if you do not have online giving set up already, to one, get it going, but then make sure that over the next few weeks that you have, you know, you're communicating this in your church as you're able to, if you're able to publicly gather at this point, that you are communicating this, you are kind of onboarding people, you are making this something that you're talking about. You know, you don't want to wait until public gatherings, if that happens, you know, are no longer available to suddenly try to, as Ray said, onboard people. You want to go ahead and be proactive right now. And it's going to be beneficial, you know, regardless if it closes, you know, your gatherings or not. So, but you want to be thinking of not just the online giving platform and what that looks like and thinking internally, but you want to definitely be thinking about that external communication piece to your people. What does it look like? You know, have a kind of sort of a help station in your foyer, in your lobby, kind of talking with people already over the next few weeks to help them understand how it works and to kind of get on.
And I'm following up on Jason as well. I would fine tune my language when it comes to giving, when you're receiving an offering or when you have a generosity moment. If you have your offering in the back, or you don't, or you pass a bucket, whatever it is, fine tune the language now to just say, and obviously the easiest and simplest way to give, the safest way to give is online, and have that on a screen, pop it up, make it super simple for people to understand. So many of the platforms have text to give so that you can just simply send a text and get right into kind of their giving pipeline. I would even have, you know, I'd be looking at simple things in addition to my giving platform. I'd be looking at a Venmo account. I'd be looking at a PayPal account just to have it as a backup so that if there's people that are it's easier for them to do that and that's what they're comfortable with, man, make it available. But the language sets culture. We know that. So repeat it over and over and over again. And if, you know, 3 weeks from now, if you're a senior pastor or a campus pastor somewhere, or you do stage time, you should almost see people mouthing the words with you. You know, the easiest and safest way to give is online. And then in addition to that, I would simply say, for me, I it's super simple once you do this, that you can set up recurring giving. And for me, I don't have a faithfulness problem. I have a forgetfulness problem, and I forget all the time. So we just automate the important things in our life. My wife and I, we automate our life insurance, our mortgage, car insurance, and we automate our tithe and our giving because it's just that important to us. I think doing that, Jeff, is significant in the fact that if there is a disaster, the last thing on people's mind is going to be giving. You know, the even if we have a digital way to give, the last thing is going to be, oh yeah. But if we automate it, it makes it a whole lot simpler, to say the least. And anyway, just a couple thoughts there.
Well, yeah. And as you're solving that automation process, as you're getting people that are tithing regularly through the system, I mean, that just doesn't solve your hurricane issue. That solves your summer dip in attendance, summer dip in giving as well. And, right. And like there's a number of things that helps with. You know, it was funny. Like I was at a church. You mentioned the Venmo thing. I was at a church and they put up a slide during the offering time, and they had like the Cash App, you know, whatever the handle, the login, whatever it was, because that was what they did for giving. And this is a while back, but I said to the person, I was like, and there was like, what'd you think of our giving? I was like, that was great, but you're not able to capitalize on the recurring giving, because I don't think at the time, like Cash App had to like, you know, suck it out of your account, withdraw it from your account every couple of weeks or so. And the person's like, you can do that? And I was like, well, not through Cash App, but there are platforms, you know, that can certainly help. Now, one of the questions that I get, and I'm just curious, because I'm sure we've all dealt with this type of pastor, this type of person, and I appreciate the heart in this. But the guy who says, "Yeah, we don't do online giving, because online giving means that people can put it on their credit cards, and we don't believe in the church incurring debt, so we're not even going to go there." I'm just curious. Anybody have like a response? How do you guys handle situations like that, or how would you handle situations like that if a pastor said that?
You know, I think I just the saucy side of me would just simply say, you probably haven't done a great job teaching your people how to handle the money that God's entrusted them with. And maybe you need to go back and do a series and do a deep dive with Dave Ramsey or whatever. It just seems to me like that whole piece of it is, I can't remember the last time somebody actually said to me outside of a pastor, is it bad if I give with my credit card? Most of the time it's miles and it's paid off and those kinds of things. They're doing it to get miles. I don't know. I'm a little bit, you know, obviously for me, we just go straight out of our checking account. It makes it simple and easy for us. But I just think the best thing you can do is probably get on the front end of it, teach people how to handle and be responsible with what God's entrusted them with more than anything else. I mean, you can't control other people's money, and nor should you try. I think once you start doing that, it's manipulation, and you got to be careful with that kind of stuff too.
Any other thoughts? Yeah, honest to God, I heard this 2 weeks ago, and it took me a minute. I was like, okay, well, like, you have a website, but people can use the internet browser to go to porn, so you trust them to go to your website, but that was what I came to, and I said porn in the worship center, and that was awkward, and maybe, like I said earlier, like, my filter sometimes doesn't
work. Great job, Jeff.
I thank you. I appreciate that. Comment from the side, Radio Armis, appreciate it. Well done. Hey, let's remember, part of this is that we have the opportunity to help the church, your church, the churches that are possibly preparing for a situation ahead. You've got also a situation to help the church long run. So moving to online giving will definitely help, especially as recurring donations coming or making it easier for people to tithe. Like, these are great steps to move in that right direction. All right, let's shift gears and let's head off of giving. Let's head over to broadcast. So we're looking at what the weekend service, when you're in this type of situation, you're unable to meet because of coronavirus, or your worship center got blown away in a tornado or a hurricane, for whatever reason, your broadcast center, your worship center, your church is not doing services on Sunday. What are some solutions? How do you handle that? What could a church do?
And we see this already in churches, and this actually has happened in Colorado whenever there's a large snowstorm or something and people can't get out. There are times when pastors actually share the message from the living room, really, and doing either via Facebook Live or on YouTube, kind of streaming it out. I think one of the things that we need to think through, and there are a couple things I would recommend that we consider. One is how do we broadcast those? And oftentimes it'll be something that's simple, and we need to think that to have a simple way to go about doing this. And so if it is a Facebook Live or something like that, or YouTube and kind of streaming it, you really want to have some sort of connection though to your website. Here at Outreach, our team is right now we've been doing some kind of brainstorming and kind of a task force coming together to try to pull some resources together. We're trying to steward our influence here to help churches, and we're providing some free streaming options that our team is building out right now, so that if a church is streaming like on Facebook, that it will also be appearing on their website, because not everyone will know or understand to go to Facebook to see your message. And so that's one thing. Whenever when it's not imperative for you to be solely streaming, Facebook is a good place for it to also be, right? It's a good extra place for it to be. But if we're in a situation where the only way that someone is going to experience worship and, you know, hear a sermon and be able to kind of be praying kind of corporately, virtually, when it's the only way that they can connect, then you want to make sure that it's not just on Facebook or not just, you know, on YouTube, but that it is also on your church's website. Because some people, again, that's the only place they'll know to go. That's where they'll likely turn, is to your church's website. So we're putting something together. It'll be ready in probably about another week or so at stream.outreach.com, which for free will just it'll just kind of connect in with your church's website through a subdomain, and whatever you're doing on Facebook Live or on YouTube, it's going to show up there. So you'll have a place, if you don't have a place on your website now, where people can see that, it'll be available for you. And that's just something that we're trying to do to help churches that are wrestling through this. But I think that a couple things you want to think through as well. It's not only your sermons. You want to kind of keep that worship experience going and connecting with people. But I would recommend you also have a set time that you are communicating with your people outside of the worship gathering. So a set time where people know that you're going to be live, you're going to be sharing updates, and you know, maybe more kind of family matters for the church itself, right? So really kind of connecting with people and having that separate kind of communication channel. This is helpful for pastoral care as well. That's one of the things that we really want to think through. It's not just our worship gatherings, but how are we going to handle pastoral care, if we're not able to meet corporately? So just really being thoughtful through that. One of the things that we even recommend is thinking through, you might even want to pre-record a few messages while you have your facilities, and you know, pre-record a 4-week sermon series or something. And you can even have your worship team come in. You can do it on a Thursday night or whatever. Do it in your church facilities now. Have, you know, a sermon series put together, because if churches are closed, they might be closed for a short amount of time. It may be only, 3 or 4 weeks. So if you already have these pre-recorded and you're kind of preparing that way, and you've prayed about this and you're being very intentional, trying to honor God in the midst of that, to have those ready to go, might be just enough you need to bridge before you're able to gather physically again. So that's one thing that we're really encouraging churches to think through as well, is what does that look like to put together a short sermon series, actually have your live worship team together, film them all, pre-record them, get them ready so that you can just upload them and go. And then more personalized connection with people, right?
There's a lot there, man. That was rich. Everything from you're throwing together real quick a software that's going to create a subdomain to move.
Yes.
If people aren't smart enough to go to Facebook, and I mean, no disrespect to the people, but having it on the website to link to, not to mention Facebook is a huge distraction. Oh, squirrel, trying to do everything they can to get you off that content, because they want you to process other content so that all the stats go up, not just yours. And so the ability to do that on your website, even YouTube, on your website in a control environment, as Facebook and YouTube are trying to distract you and pull you away, your domain is going to allow you to control and for those people to engage at a much longer level. And I love this idea. But what I really want to park on is maybe like this, the controlled updates, what you're communicating. I can tell you, it's just in the churches that I've worked in different situations, dealing with the tornadoes when I lived in Texas and the hurricanes in Miami. Sometimes I feel like I'm talking sports a little bit, but what do you communicate? Like, what types of things would we regularly communicate out to people? What are some thoughts there? What are people looking for messaging wise from their church in seasons like this?
Well, for us, this just doing church in Miami, especially in hurricane season, it was whether or not we were going to be open on a particular weekend, whether or not we were going to gather. And that right there is big for everybody. Just to know whether or not the doors are going to be open on a Sunday morning is a big deal. And how you communicate that, I strongly suggest for a lot of churches, if you don't have a texting strategy, texting for us, especially in recent times for live updates to the minute, has been such a big deal. And it's not something that we use for, and we're very careful about this. I'm the guardian of the gate on our texting strategy, because you don't want to inundate people like you do with emails. I'm sure all of you that are listening out there, your church is probably inundating a lot of folks with a lot of emails, and therefore your email open rate is not that great. But the text open rate is actually really good. People will check text messages, especially in emergency situations, on this stuff. So whether or not you're going to be open, or even if you're ready to help people, is another great way to communicate via text.
A couple other things that I would kind of think about in these times of communication are obviously health updates. If there are things going on in your community, in your state, or within your people themselves, you know, your congregants, then kind of health updates with them. But also be thinking about your missions connections around the world, what's going on in different areas of the world at the time, and sharing updates in regard to, you know, if you have missionaries out from your church or serving in different areas, and just really helping people to feel like they're informed, but not just what they're getting from the news, but from a kind of a church family perspective. Like we're part of the church, and this is an opportunity. I think something like this is a huge opportunity for the church. We see this whenever there are natural disasters, right? When the church steps up and the church is being a part of helping to bring healing and wholeness to the community, we can see this. And so if we are championing this idea of hope and opportunity, that you know, God is at work in the midst of crises like this, I think those are the additional things, aside from the, you know, important things of just like, hey, are we gathering? What's next? Where are places where you can get support, where you can get help? Whatever those types of things look like. But what are the things that the life of the church is doing in the midst of a crisis? Because we're not stopping church. Just if we're not able to gather physically, that doesn't mean that church is stopping, right? So what are we doing as the church, and how are we connected to the greater church across the country, around the world? And what are some of those stories that we can be sharing with our people?
Yeah, just to add on that, I think if a crisis is happening at a church, the chances are the whole city that the church is in is suffering. So ways to communicate and just empowering the whole church member to help the community would be a big thing, and practical ways on how the church can help the community, and maybe do a research on what the city is suffering with and what are some areas that if there's any, maybe just like waters or other resources that are needed, it can be a place where churches can help the community and let the communities know that the church is helping.
I think there's a huge opportunity for the and I'm even resorting back to 1992 Hurricane Andrew. Ray, were you in Miami in 92? Ray, were you alive in 92? I'm not even sure. You may be that young.
I'm trying to unmute here. Yeah, I was totally alive in 92. I, like Jeff, was sitting in my house that was imploding around me, and running. We actually had to leave in the middle of the storm. We had to leave our house, and we were out of it after the storm for a year and a half.
Yeah.
You know, living with my aunt and uncle. We actually lived at a hotel for a week post-storm and all of that. And I'll tell you, I mean, and so many folks are dealing with this now over in East Nashville, and I think of all the different disasters that have struck both churches and people alike, finding ways to mobilize your people after the fact. Oh man, the church in action, when we've seen it, it is so powerful. In our circles, and Jeff knows this, we're so grateful for Southern Baptist Relief, because typically they've been boots to ground like the day after a storm hits. They've been there with food trucks. They've been there with everything ready to go to serve the community, and just collaborating with churches on how to get a community back on its feet. And we've been the beneficiaries of that. I mean, at least in my lifetime, I could think of five instances where Southern Baptist Relief actually came through and served churches and people in our community, both to give the gospel, but also in practical ways to get boots to the ground immediately for volunteers. And it was awesome.
There's a huge opportunity for the church to be on mission in the midst of and after tragedies like those. Like, I can remember I was a high school freshman, literally a high school freshman, and I skipped out of football practice for the first couple weeks. My football coach wasn't happy when I finally came back, but I literally was running like the Red Cross, the Baptist, you know, health, all of like the food distribution and clothes. I was part of that, because for me, as a high school freshman. And yes, I got out of two-a-days. That was maybe part of it. But it was also this idea of let me be on mission. Let me help people who are in greater need. And the opportunity for the church to have a presence in some of those situations and in the midst of it. But what's interesting is if you don't have that culture beforehand, it's a lot harder to fall back on that culture when you need it. You know, there are churches that I've personally have attended or worked at that have that huge serving culture, selfless serving the community culture. And then there are others that probably struggle with that. And so like there's huge opportunities for the church to tap into that. You know, it's kind of ironic where, and Ray, you may appreciate this on the podcast, we always talk about how church is more than the nickels and noses, and the things that we've talked about at this point is literally like giving and broadcast. I totally didn't mean to do that, but we accidentally stumbled into that. But these are two big components, but there's more to church than just like those two components, right? At least I hope there is. What does like groups look like? What is gathering together in environments where you can't gather together? What could that look like?
Yeah, for us at Saddleback, we have a lot of online groups that meet through Zoom, just like we're doing. For us, how an online group looks like is they would, you know, share a screen of a teaching that's about 15 to 20 minutes long, and we would have study guides with some questions that people can discuss. So it's something that we are doing already, and it's something that I believe will come in very much benefit when it, you know, in times of crisis. And other churches can do it with on just the weekend messages. As pastors and preachers, we are creators, right? We create content all the time, and we can put to a great use by just putting some questions in and having people coming together in a Zoom call, or even just in chat functions and messengers, and people can discuss after watching the preaching. So that might work for a lot of churches.
So the one thing that I've learned in recent days is there are a ton of free platforms, or virtually free platforms, that allow for, you know, this Zoom functionality. It seems like most churches and even a lot of the businesses are falling back on Zoom. Like that's becoming more and more the preferred. But Skype's free, FaceTime, obviously FaceTime requires everybody have an iPhone or an iOS device. That's free. And they've now got groups up to like 8 or 10, I think, that can be on and doing that. Google Hangouts, I know, is another one that for me has been a technological nightmare in the past, but more and more people are telling me that it's become more stable. I think Google Hangouts has a limit of like 6 or 7 people. That may have even have grown past that. Talkie.io. Actually, I think it was somebody at Life Church that connected me with that. That's a Zoom competitor that's 100% free. Even things like Discord, I know, has a free video chat that's built in. Slack, I don't use that one a lot, but at least the video chat, but it's there. Facebook, I got a Facebook audio call from a guy today. I was like, oh, okay, I'll talk to you now. I can't tell you the conversation went well, but he at least tried to call me. What other platforms that are out there that would be an option for somebody, you know, free or nearly free, that a church could dive into to experiment with?
Yeah, if you're looking for synchronous activity, so together talking same time, you mentioned Facebook Messenger. I know with Facebook Messenger you can have up to 50 people on a call, so that's a pretty significant size. So if you're now you can visibly see, you can video, I think it's up to 8, but audio you can have up to 50 people. So a lot of people have Facebook Messenger. So that might be a simpler one to jump on.
Have you had, and I'm literally asking this, and I don't mean anything rude, have you had good luck with Facebook on audio and video? I personally have had bad luck, but yeah, it could be me.
It's, I have more recently.
Okay.
It seemed to be relatively stable. So,
I know they just came out with at least with time of this recording, wherever we are, March, they came out with a new Facebook Messenger app. I don't know if there was like, it was just superficial design or if there's anything under the hood, but hopefully they've changed some of this stuff. Ray's messaging me. He's having problems with his Zoom on his phone. So maybe there's more bugs in this than we really anticipated, but you know, he's saying WhatsApp, and I can tell you like we've used WhatsApp, which really also brings in, you know, WhatsApp for audio, with that. But that also brings in this idea of text-based groups and how, like, you know, and Ray and I, we've had conversations about this in other podcasts, talking about how being in a text community or a community of friends, people that we know, keeping in touch with each other via the text groups, everything from like the sarcastic jokes and the constant trolling of one another, even to the place of like, how can I pray for you? What's going on in your life? What, when you read this scripture, what are the things that come out, becoming more pastoral as well as, you know, just more relaxed? Like, have you guys experienced, I'm just curious, even within the group, that like text engaging relationship where maybe it's 6 or 8 people in a WhatsApp group or a, you know, a group me app or something like that? Anybody want to share a story from that?
Yeah, I mean, I do quite a bit of work with groups of people. And inevitably, it takes one quick conversation, like, here's the rules for our text. And that keeps you on the right track. So somebody doesn't get in too many memes. I'm like the king of memes, so I'm usually the one calling myself out. some of those things you just can establish, here's how we're going to communicate, and here's the pathway that it goes. I would even encourage you, I'm following up on what Ray said earlier about a texting strategy. I think I would also begin trying to figure a ways to, I'm always a proponent of taking what happens in the real world and making digital a piece of that. So if you're attending church this Sunday, how is your congregation going to act in a digital way and when they're in person? So it could be, hey, if you want the latest updates, the best way to do that is simply sign up for our texting service. And you can do it right here. Just text this number and it's done. So you begin that kind of communication pathway that here's how we're going to communicate. And when you need to know the latest of what's happening here at church, this is the fastest way for us to get it out. I would be trying to figure in a couple digital elements along the way too. So anyway.
Yeah, I love the idea of like the digital approach where what you're doing in the physical world also matches the digital and utilizing that as a community piece. And even, and Chase will get to you in a second, but even the idea of doing your announcements in a way during a season when it's healing, where people need to know, do them in an area where they can respond and ask questions or ask poignant questions like, how can we pray for you in the midst of this, and give people an opportunity to voice. I mean, we talk about how engaging, the word engagement is lost a lot of its meaning. For me, engagement means not talking, but listening. It's better to ask a question than make a statement. And for a church and an organization to ask the question and allow the church body to respond, man, that like at an upper, and allow the church body to minister to itself through that group, man, that would be powerful in a situation like this where there would be a lot of pain and hurting. I'm sorry, Jason, I took you a little off topic. You were going to say?
No. That's all solid stuff. I was going to say two platforms that I would really try to consider or focus in on. One is a platform that probably more than likely for most churches will be new. So you can only do this if you're going to spend, you know, a few weeks right now up front getting people onboarded, but that's Slack. We use Slack here at Outreach all the time. And Slack, you know, for free, you can have unlimited channels. It can be private channels, it can be public channels. You can create channels for different groups, whether it's small groups, discipling groups, whatever it might be, general groups. You can invite people in. It's very, very helpful. There are apps for it, so you can get notifications as people are sharing, and you can have back-to-back conversations pretty easily. And it's a real simple system to use. and it has, you know, some different add-ons that you can integrate. And it's just, there's a lot of flexibility with Slack. So if you have time to, you know, to help onboard people to Slack, then that's something. If you don't have time, or just another really good option, Facebook groups. Almost everyone's on Facebook, whether you like it or not. I'm not a massive Facebook user myself, except that I have to use Facebook because I run groups on Facebook. You know what I mean? So I have responsibility with people there. So, but Facebook groups are one of those things that you can set up. Again, you can set up public groups or private groups. You can invite people into the groups. You can really structure them. You can upload videos and different things. You can do live teaching in the group. So for your small groups, your life groups, you know, discipling type things, really, really functional, actually. So that's an idea. And like I said, a lot of people are on Facebook. So it's not, whether you love Facebook or hate it, it happens to be where a lot of people are hanging out. So, or at least have an account, right? So if you have to go to something, at least a lot of people, if they don't spend a lot of time there, a lot of people have an account, so they can, if you say, hey, log on to Facebook, there's going to be an invite in your notifications for, you know, your small group or whatever. So
Slack is free up until, you know, X number of posts, and it just, it cycles through. Like, it doesn't archive your entire life on it. It's like, I've got, through my business, I use a free account, and I've got a number of select people that I'm on it, and it's awesome. And I think it's more powerful than the Discords. Discords are, it's like Slack for video gamers. Right. I like it better than WhatsApp, because WhatsApp just seems to be a lot of like noise, not as structured. But I'm also like, I don't want noise. I want structure. I'm like Andrew, except I don't do the memes. I yell at the people who do the memes. So like, I'll just have to, Andrew, I'm not giving you my cell phone number, because I don't want the memes. The thing that I've always, it was funny, like in my head, like Facebook Workplace, where it's like the separate version of it, I always thought that would be a great idea. Like, more churches should take advantage of that, where they're the only ones that are in there. They're not worried about the algorithm. They can really control it. And Stadia, I love Stadia. Stadia uses it. But I got to tell you, it's become another inbox. It wasn't like, oh, I'm already in this Facebook Workplace app all the time, so I'm naturally just getting this information. It's become, oh yeah, that's the app that's got like X number of notifications. I'm just going to ignore that from now. I'll look at it later. And I only get to it once every, you know, once or twice a week, which is enough for how Stadia is using it. But if I was a church, I would want somebody to engage in it more than that. So that's one of those things. It's like, man, we should really do that. But when I actually try it, it's like, nah, not really. But this is good. So like, I'm just curious, like what other, are there any other areas of church when we're looking at, okay, so we have to prepare for coronavirus, or we have to, you know, prepare for a future natural disaster or emergency. What are some other tools or thoughts, some holes that we need to fill in for a church to function?
Can I just give two overarching like thoughts that I want to make sure that we communicate. The first thing is like, Kevin and I are out here in California. I'm in San Diego, he's in LA. I'm back and forth to Palo Alto, so the Bay Area quite a bit. If you'd asked them 2 or 3 weeks ago, are they worried about this current crisis? Not a bit, they're not at all. When your community has one or two infections that happen, or positive tests, all of a sudden people start going, oh, this, we're going to stop gathering. So if you're out there today, you're listening to us going, hey, this is great. These guys are, you know, doomsday prophets and that kind of stuff. Just know that it would take one case, one positive case in your community before your church population starts going, oh, are we going to go to church on Sunday? Because a lot of people are going to be there. Okay. So that's the first thing, to just kind of keep that in mind, not to panic over it, but to just plan for it. That if it does happen, you want to be prepared. And then the second thing, and Jeff and I offline had talked briefly about this the other day, as any responsible pastor, and if you're in charge of content or development of content, I would be preparing for Easter as well. Like, what happens the biggest day of the year, our Super Bowl, if 2 weeks before, a week before, You get a case in your area, and we know there's going to be more cases. Don't know how many, but I would just prepare to develop all your content for Easter. You got plenty of time to do it if you start now, going, what's our plan when that happens? So those kind of two overarching things are things that I want to make sure just philosophically people are thinking about, not necessarily tools, but mm-hmm. we really should be thinking that way.
Yeah, collectively, you just made every creative director for a church in America's head explode. Like, it's just all over the place. And
if they give me their cell phone number, I'll send them a meme as well, and we'll just double them, and boom.
Just double it up. Yeah. Okay, but I mean, there's some validity, at least in the awareness of we're not that far away. There could always be an issue, especially. You know, you guys living literally on the edge of the tectoral plates, I think it's called. I'm going back to like my elementary geology. Is that the tectoral? That's not the right word. It's something called plates. What is it called?
Like dinosaur, what you just said.
There's something, is it? What's the term?
Tectonic.
Tectonic. There you go. Thank you. Jason, saving the day, man. That's awesome. Seeing those tectonic right there on the edge of that. It's awareness to this, right? And then it's flexibility to know, okay, in those situations, we got to figure it out. You know, I actually last year, a friend of mine, and this is like the creative purpose, but their church did a Good Friday service, and it was entirely shot off a single camera in somebody's living room. Like it was an acoustic unplugged set, and they had thousands of views, and it was centered around my man's living room with a single camera and eight people doing a musical / worship stuff, and not overly produced, nothing, crazy, just a single camera stream, but it was immensely powerful. And so it's, you know, and given especially where we are, at least let's take the time to ask the question, you know, what could we do? What's the plan? What would it be? Should we have to explore it? Don't write it in stone. Don't even write it in ink. But at least have in pencil, okay, hey, this is the path that we're going to go on. This is the gear that we have. This is how we can use it. We need to acquire this. And honestly, and this isn't being like crazy, but I think have some of that gear in place. Like know that, oh, I've got to buy a Mevo camera. And so it's a $300 purchase. Let's go ahead and buy it because you're going to need it at some point. Be prepared for these situations so that when you have to respond, you can respond quickly with the best foot forward for the kingdom, as opposed to scrambling and regretting things along the way.
Specifically the coronavirus, which is, you know, a pandemic's a little different than a natural disaster in that natural disasters may be knocking out our internet access or our power access, you know, that could be a whole different thing. But with this, I think the way people will react, like Andrew said, it doesn't have to be that our government says, okay, people can't gather publicly. I mean, if we look at our churches today, average attendees are showing up, you know, two times a month, maybe, you know, three times a month, if you're really, really, you know, have a really engaged congregation. And so it's not going to take necessarily the government to say, hey, you know, you can't gather publicly. It's going to take just a little bit of, you know, extra concern that, you know, a family does not want to have their kids out in a public space because, you know, there's, you know, been some virus has been, you know, reported in the area or even in the next city away, or, you know, next big city. And we're seeing this already in churches like in Washington. You're already seeing this happening. So it's one of those things that we want to think about again, not to be alarmist or whatever, but just be prepared. What is this going to look like? If there are people who have some bigger fears and who are going to say, you know what, we're just going to voluntarily stay at home and watch worship online. Right? Because we just don't want to take that extra risk of exposure for whatever reason. And people have different levels of fear and anxiety over these things. You know what I mean? So I think it's one of those things that, again, you know, we're not saying that the sky is falling, but we're saying, let's just think through this, because there are going to be people who are not going to show up. simply because of concern of being in public places gathered with people. So you want to keep that in mind, right?
We haven't even touched on, there's a whole other group of people that aren't interested in coming into your building to be spiritually fed. But if you moved some of your resource and your discipleship online, you'd reach a whole lot more people. Like, all these conversations that we're tastefully having centered around in the framework of coronavirus or, you know, impending other natural disasters. The reality is that, and I believe this, maybe it's not the reality, but I believe the churches are going to get smaller and churches are going to get bigger, and more that the church is going to be engaging with content online, and our ability to disciple, to help people grow deeper in their faith, to keep people on mission, utilizing online tools, they're going to be very effective, not for the church post-corona, not even for the church post-natural disasters. I think they're effective for the church today. You've got people in your audience, and I used the word digital earlier, they are a mixture of physical and digital. They're a mixture of physical engagement and online engagement. And for the church to truly be effective, we need to start transitioning away from online-only discipleship, physical-only discipleship, physical-only small groups, and start to move into a world where people can engage more, ask more spiritual questions, grow deeper in their faith, and be on mission through some of these digital tools. I believe the church will look far different if it opens up and if it changes and embraces culture, not just in the physical front, but if it embraces it on the digital too. But I'm a little jaded there. Kind of like that's a pet peeve. So that's a thing. But hey, this has been a great podcast. I want to ask one more question. So dealing, and this is actually a Ray question. Ray had to step out. He's got a thing tonight at the church, but ministering to fear driven culture, what do people need to hear spiritually after going through something like Corona, after going through something like a natural disaster? What are the elements pastorally? Just put on your pastor hat here for a second. Like, what are they looking to hear? What do they need to hear in situations like
that? I think for me, I look at it, number one, they need to know and understand, hear the assurance that God is still God and he's still in control. And then what they need to see from leaders is calmness and trust in God and not panic from a leader, but somebody that is steady in what they're in how they're leading and how they're connecting with people still, that the, you know what, God's called us here. And until Christ comes back, we're going to occupy and continue to move forward. And, you know, will we have times where things are up, down, questionable, not understanding everything? Absolutely. But we should be not only men and women of faith, which obviously is the opposite of fear, but also like that should show a little bit, not in a cocky way, but just in an assurance way to go, we know God has this and we want to let you see that we understand that.
I would say that we really need to help our people, and not just our people, but the world to see that God is present with us in the midst of tragedy. I think that's super key, that we know that there is hope within difficult times and challenging times, that we're not left alone, that we're not, God hasn't deserted people, but God is actually, you know, suffering through this alongside of us and walking with us through it. So I think that's key. I think one of the other things, especially for our people, and even preparing moving into this, you know, like potentially, because we talked about some of the opportunities, but I remember I preached the Sunday after 9/11. And I'll never forget that Sunday as long as I live, right? And just with my people, and just there's a lot of brokenness, but it ended up being also not just a time of, you know, coming together and kind of embracing one another and talking about hope in the midst of crisis, but also incredible opportunity. God is a God of redemption, and what the enemy means for evil, God redeems for his purposes and for good. And so whenever there are crises like these, we have the opportunity to say there are people who are living broken lives, and they're looking for wholeness, And in the midst of this, there's even more brokenness. You know, your life's already broken, and yet, and then there's some sort of calamity or tragedy. And so we as the church have the opportunity to engage people in a way that oftentimes only come through these difficult circumstances, right? And we see this in individual people's lives, but I think we're going to be seeing this in the lives of nations around the world, in the lives of cities and communities, that there is this hunger for something true and something real. And we have the opportunity. So we want to encourage our people that as much as we're going through this, and we want to be here for one another in the midst of this, this is also an incredible opportunity for the mission of God, for people to experience the hope of Jesus, maybe for the first time in their lives. And we want to be a part of God's redemption in the midst of all of this.
Hey, Kevin, as we're wrapping up, you know, I know part of this, we wanted to create some resources for Korea. Do you have any messages or anything for the people there? Like what would you say to the Korean audience right now?
Yeah, I just want to echo what Andrew and Jason said. Just encourage them that, you know, the spirit that is in us is stronger than the spirit of the world. And, you know, one thing that I know about Korea is it's a very enduring country. It has endured a lot, and I know it's going to overcome it. So the resources, I think, our conversation was very helpful because a lot of churches are only looking at how to stream services, but we are giving different dimensions of how we can express church online. And it's been incredibly beneficial just to hear it. And I can't wait to share it with some churches in Korea.
Hey, gentlemen, thank you very much. We're going to land the plane here. This has been a great podcast. And I'm honored to be with you guys to touch on this very sensitive project. And we didn't say it up front, like health concerns. I'm the last person to want to give advice to somebody on how to do, like, you know, wash your hands, don't touch your face. Like, it was funny. I was watching Comedy Central and had lined up all these politicians who were making these announcements of do the smart thing, don't touch your face. And then like 5 seconds later, they cut to a clip of them like rubbing their face over. And I know not to touch my face, but I'm sitting here with my hands on my chin and doing everything I can not to do it. So don't listen to me on the physical stuff. And I'm not even going to talk to you about that. Listen to like you, whatever the news sources around that are hopefully giving wise sage advice in that situation. But I do know this, there's more to the church than what happens for the 1 hour on Sunday. And there's more to the church than what happens when it hits the plate. So as you're looking at preparing a strategy for what church needs to be, how we need to care for and shepherd people who are going through tragic situations like this, don't just look at the 1 hour Sunday replacement. Take a deeper dive, look at really what the heart of ministry is, and then look at the heart of what church is, and then figure out how to replicate that digitally. It's going to help you plan for the emergency situations that will come. And chances are it's going to help you with your day-to-day ministry today. For Andrew, for Kevin, for Jason, for Ray, who had to step off, this is Jeff with The Church Digital. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time here on the podcast. Y'all have a good day.